Supply chains adjust to the Baltimore Key Bridge collapse, the latest stats on the health of the industry, and applying generative AI to business processes. Pull up a chair and join us as the editors of DC Velocity discuss these stories, as well as news and supply chain trends on this week's Logistics Matters podcast. Hi, I'm Dave Maloney. I'm the Group Editorial Director at DC Velocity. Welcome. Logistics Matters is sponsored by Trevero Logistics. Trevero Logistics is an experienced Midwest-based freight brokerage firm. They have a national network of trusted carriers ready to meet your freight transportation needs. Visit Trevero.com and let their experts find you a solution. That's T-R-A-V-E-R-O.com. As usual, our DC Velocity senior editors Ben Ames and Victoria Kickham will be along to provide their insights into the top stories of this week. But to begin today, it's been a little over a week since the cargo ship Dahlia struck and brought down Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge. Supply chains are working hard to adjust to limited operations at the Port of Baltimore and shifting cargo to other ports and road networks. To find out the latest from Baltimore and the impacts to supply chains, here is Ben with today's guest. Ben?
Thank you, Dave. That's right. It's been about 10 days since the tragic collision there. Sadly, at least six lives were lost. Of course, a major highway route is gone, and the port itself has been closed for ocean access since the accident because of debris and wreckage in the water in the channel there. Here to talk with us today about how the reaction of companies' supply chains is going to all that is Stephen Dyke. He is Principal Solutions Consultant at Forkites. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you, Ben. I appreciate the time here today.
We're glad to have you. To start us off, could you just give a quick description of what Forkites does in general and how that touches on maritime and land logistics?
So Forkites is an enabler and provider of global end-to-end supply chain real-time visibility in the context of connecting to every servicing asset that would help deliver the fulfillment of goods needing to be in transit over the road, rail, ocean, as well as in the air, parcel, last mile. Within that real-time visibility enablement, that does connect that of life cycles of end-to-end orders, whether an inbound purchase order is trying to connect a supplier to the prospective buyer, or making sure those goods are ready from a provider of those goods out to an end consumer.
Perfect match for what we need to know, because we've now, had some time since the bridge fell for companies to figure out their supply chain implications of that. And there are a lot of moving parts here that, as I mentioned, inbound ships can't drop off their loads and containers that were already on the ground at the Port of Baltimore can't get loaded onto outbound ships. So have you seen how companies are reacting and which solutions seem to be working?
Yes, definitely. And, from that, your terrible tragedy, we'd also like to offer, our condolences, to those impacted. Is once you look at the first thing from a shipper's perspective or a consumer of expecting cargo is, first of all, is do I have cargo that is directly impacted on the East Coast, maybe more in the vicinity of the Baltimore tragedy? So from that identification of, yes, these are the goods that I do have impacted, that naturally leads to that ripple effect of, well, what's going to be the rerouting options that would be made available to me? So being able to try to get to the single source of a data point or multiple data points that I can then take and trust and leverage into possible recovery adjustment plans, that's been that immediate, you could appreciate, scramble of information and transparency of that information that, receiving customers have been wanting to do from those goods coming into Baltimore as well as the East Coast. But typically what we are seeing from that is, there were some initial, just immediate, the next 3 to 4 days after the tragedy of just natural growth of congestions, just due to those rerouting plans needing to be defined and being able to be actioned. Because one of the things that is an unfortunate reality on maritime is if you look at just the massive size of ocean container vessels that can carry anywhere from 5,000 to over 20,000 individual containers, it creates this, significant compounding effect of hundreds to thousands of potential shippers or receivers of those containers wanting that same level of information frame that we just discussed. So once that gets done, you also now have some of the limitations of capacity constraints that would be at the other ports from their, you know, pending schedules that they already had planned and set as well. So from those initial spikes of delays through some rerouting congestion, you are seeing that rerouting efficiencies are about 64% from Baltimore to Norfolk, Virginia, about 21% up to the Newark port, and about 8% up to New York.
Despite losing its link to the ocean, the Port of Baltimore itself, I believe, has continued its operations on land. So have you also seen changes there in terms of handling freight at the piers or the truck traffic, or you mentioned rail and intermodal?
So for those goods that have been, you know, able to be discharged within the Port of Baltimore before the tragedy, those efficiency of the operational flows have been, you know, in kind of that normal congestion capacity that we are accustomed to seeing. Now, what has delayed a little bit is naturally, as you have this rerouting out to the respective ports, is because of how the contracted services of dray operations are typically executed. You're now getting into that supplementing or needing to rechange or to change your routing optimization and servicing plans to the other dray ports of call. So it's also creating a little bit of that compounding effect of when will I have access to my container at these other ports that the dray companies and providers a lot of times can't give that level of transparency. But that is bringing in some of those congestions that we are seeing now on the inland side, as it's called, from the port operations once the vessels are able to get berth and unload the containers.
Gotcha. So speaking of congestion, do you have a sense of how this has affected truck traffic around the port, you know, in terms of losing the flow of goods, but also losing an interstate highway? I think I-695, that was the one that had been, of course, on the bridge. And has that led to trucking delays or price hikes?
Yeah, from the delays perspective, you'll naturally see some of that incremental spike just due to that needing to find the new route options that would be available to someone to find those alternate paths. And then now you've got that natural congestion as well from the immediate area of impact. So you are seeing natural delays on those dray life cycles be extended, up to, 1 to 2 to 3 days on average. Again, it just depends on the type of service and the time of the day of the week for that respective service. But then also what you see about that impact down into, the economics is naturally, as this data is coming forth about a conversation of delays, congestion, reroutings, not maybe being able to action on data immediately because of all these reroutings taking place, that does lead to some natural spike in inflation, responses that you do see. And I think that is some of the opportunity of optimism as these reroutings get more efficient in their flow. The port operations, such as at Norfolk, at Charleston, at Newark, are able to rebalance and reprioritize some of this additional volume of capacity coming in, and the good flow starts increasing, is that that will subside, some of those, price hike fears and concerns that naturally do happen once a disruption of this scale does occur.
And do you know if any of these changes are affecting certain commodities more than others? For example, I know Baltimore, it's a mid-sized container port just by volume, but I believe it's the nation's biggest site for car and light truck imports and other roll-on, roll-off vehicles.
Absolutely, yeah, and a lot of heavy machinery as well. So yeah, you have that significance of some supply-strapped industries already. And as you look at the seasons that we're coming into, spring here in the U.S. up to summer now in the common fiscal years, you'll also see that common demand of buyers, wanting those access to those goods and services. So yeah, that congestion flow of these commodity types with the demands that are out in the marketplace, that can lead to, some of that impact on delaying deliveries of goods that have been promised or hinder some of those manufacturing of opportunities of maybe supplies and raw materials coming inbound that were needed to do some of that OEM finished goods manufacturing here in the U.S.
Gotcha. And then For all of these different variables that we've been talking about, is it just regional, or does it have a sort of ripple effect over a greater area? I know you've mentioned a number of nearby ports, but what is your measure on the sort of the size of the impact?
Yeah, so as you do naturally expand across all ports along the East Coast, is because they already had their set capacity and their operational plan. And that is one of the balancing challenges in this tragedy. You have to have certain equipment and certain cranes, certain chassis, if you will, at these different ports, and having that on hand so that as this more capacity comes in, right, the flow of containers can optimally continue. So when you look at planned service schedules at these other ports, now you bring in this rerouting capacity that is triggering inland, right? Some of that removing, rebalancing of inventory of, you know, chassis, having the right fleet containers in the certain areas to be able to service these inland dray legs when appropriate. Another compounding effect that would be when you get to intermodal rail on the inland side is, you know, there's only so many placed rail ramps within the East Coast in association of those ports of call as well. So that does lead to some of that planned original scheduling for all these operations inland, as well as at the port, to now having to bring in supplemental rerouting volume. So it's actually going to lead that of natural delays of, you know, several days up to a week, just depending upon, again, the type of material, type of flow of the rerouting that you are getting sent to.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, Stephen, we really appreciate your taking time out of your day to come and talk us through some of these issues. Thank you for coming on the show with us.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that time.
Our guest today has been Stephen Dyke from ForeKites. Back to you, Dave.
Thank you, Stephen and Ben. Now let's take a look at some of the other supply chain news from the week. And Victoria, you regularly track the Logistics Managers Index that comes out each month to measure the health of the supply chain industry, and you have some new numbers to share with us today.
Yes, that's right, I do. So economic activity in the logistics industry grew for the fourth straight month in March, and it marked a continued return to more healthy and normal growth levels. That's according to, as you said, the latest Logistics Managers Index, or LMI report, which was released earlier this week. So I think it's been a while since I've talked about this, so just to refresh, the LMI is a monthly report that measures economic activity across warehousing and transportation markets. A reading above 50 indicates economic expansion, and a reading below 50 indicates contraction. Now, the LMI researchers arrive at that number based on a monthly survey of logistics managers nationwide. So the LMI for March registered 58.3, and that's up nearly 2 points from February and continues an upward trend since last December. The index actually fell to 49.4 last November, and it also dipped into contraction territory last summer, falling below that growth threshold in May, June, and July of 2023. So this current pattern marks a return to more traditional growth following accelerated expansion in logistics during the pandemic, and then we had that subsequent freight recession, which ushered in some volatile conditions for much of 2022 and 23. In March, the growth was helped by inventory expansion and also better utilization of warehousing and transportation resources, according to the LMI researchers.
So, Victoria, we're really seeing a return to normal, essentially?
It seems that way, yes. But there are still some bumps out there. Transportation markets, for instance, are improving, but we're not out of the freight recession just yet. I spoke to Zach Rogers of Colorado State University. He's one of the LMI researchers. And he said, you know, he pointed out that there's still a lot of capacity out there, especially in trucking. And he said a couple of things need to happen for freight markets to sort of truly improve. Demand for service needs to increase, and capacity needs to contract a bit further than it has over the past year or so. The good news is that the LMI's Future Conditions Index, which asks survey respondents to gauge where the industry will be over the next 12 months, that indicates that demand for transportation will increase and that we'll be using some of that extra capacity. So hopefully that's what will come to pass, and we'll see even more improvement in the months ahead.
Yeah, that certainly is good news for the transportation markets. And as you said, it's been a rough year or so for those transportation markets. So good to see some turnaround.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Victoria.
You're welcome.
And Ben, we continue to report on the growing rise of artificial intelligence tools that are now available within our supply chains to help with planning and resources. And you wrote this week about some specific ways that companies are looking to apply generative AI into their business practices. Can you share more about what's being done?
Yeah, I'm glad to. So ever since ChatGPT came out a little more than a year ago, people have been playing around with these chatbots that are powered by generative artificial intelligence, or GenAI. And, you know, these tools can definitely do some impressive things in terms of holding natural language text conversations with humans and instantly researching the internet to provide unique answers. But it's always been harder to answer how that can actually help us get our work done better or faster. But we got a little more information on that question this week. That was with the news that KPMG, the consulting firm, is expanding its relationship with Google Cloud. Google Cloud makes its own brands of generative AI, calls them Gemini and Vertex, but the general idea is similar to ChatGPT. So what these two companies are doing, they agreed to create what they call a center of excellence, and that will combine that Google technology with KPMG's industry knowledge. And the goal is to accelerate the adoption of generative AI by enterprise organizations, which is large corporations. So as part of that approach, Google Cloud will train KPMG professionals on those AI technologies. And actually, KPMG will use Google's AI for the consulting firm's own internal use. Learning the best way is hands-on, right? And so they're going to use it to, for example, you can use generative AI for coding assistance for software development. And they also plan to use the natural language chat part to analyze business data, they said.
Ben, those sound like some interesting applications. Did KPMG say how their clients might use generative AI?
Well, they gave three examples of the type of thing they're looking into here. One was the chief financial officer transformation. So a CFO might use AI-powered insights to enhance productivity and strategic planning or forecasting or performance management. The second example was customer support, using AI to enhance the consumer buying experience through things like agent assist features. And the third example was AI-powered security, which is using generative AI to support the development of, we're talking about cyber security frameworks here, so organizations can better prepare, protect themselves against those threats. And one more thing that caught my eye, KPMG said that the collaboration that they're expanding here will also include steps to ensure what they call the responsible and ethical use of artificial intelligence. That's intended to make sure that the technology aligns with ethical standards, legal requirements, and societal expectations. There's a lot there, but that's an important detail. It actually follows a White House initiative last year to create a similar effort at the U.S. Department of Commerce. So it's a good reminder that this is a powerful new technology, a lot of potential there, but we're still definitely all figuring out how to apply it safely.
Yeah, that is true. We're all trying to figure out just how it can be applied and done safely. And I think it will continue to be a rather fluid technology, changing constantly.
I'm sure we'll be talking about it more if you tune into a future episode.
Exactly. Thanks, Ben.
Glad to.
We encourage listeners to go to dcvelocity.com for more on these and other supply chain stories. Also, check out the podcast notes section for some direct links to read more about the topics that we discussed today. And we'd like to thank Stephen Dyke of Four Kites for being our guest. We welcome your comments on this topic and our other stories. You can email us at podcast@agilebme.com. We also encourage you to subscribe to Logistics Matters at your favorite podcast platform. Our new episodes are uploaded on Fridays. And a reminder that Logistics Matters is sponsored by Trevero Logistics. Trevero Logistics is an experienced Midwest-based freight brokerage firm. They have a national network of trusted carriers ready to meet your freight transportation needs. Visit Trevero.com and let their experts find you a solution. That's Trevero.com. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Logistics Matters. Be sure to join us. Until then, have a great week.